You would not believe this, John. I would watch it my own eyes. Kids like, they were young, I don't know how old, 14, 15, maybe that, 16. I watched Jim Curry, I watched Andre Agassi, I watched a kid who I thought was going to be a big star, but didn't pan out. I mean, he had a great college career, Martin Blackman, and I watched David Wheaton. I watched early, right prior to them, when my girl started, Aaron Krickstein, Jimmy Arias, and oh man, it was so much fun.
Everyone, John Wertheim here. It's this week's Sports Illustrated SI.com tennis podcast. We have a special guest this week, Dick Vitale. You know him, of course, from college basketball broadcasting on ESPN. His passion for hoops, I would say, is rivaled by his passion for tennis. He is a huge fan of the sport. He plays himself. He has daughters that play. He'll talk about all of that coming up. I don't anticipate doing a lot of talking on this podcast. This is almost like a week off for me, but as passionate as Dick Vitale is about tennis and basketball, he's also passionate about raising funds for pediatric cancer research. He's having his annual gala May 13th at the Ritz-Carlton Sarasota. We've covered his event in the past in Sports Illustrated. This year, it's May 13th next week at the Ritz-Carlton Sarasota. Encourage you to check out the website that we will link. But Dick Vitale is a tremendous guest. We need to get some tennis pet phrases, some get a TOs, some diaper dandies, some PTPers. We need some of that for tennis. We wish that his enthusiasm and passion carried to this sport as well. We'd like to see him replace Mike Tirico, who's leaving ESPN. We'd like to see Dick Vitale on tennis coverage. We talk about that a little bit. Without further ado, you won't be hearing much from me for the next half hour. We turn it over. Glad he was able to join us. Dick Vitale, welcome. I appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much.
No problem.
We've had a lot of requests to have you on, so I'm glad we hooked this up because you have a reputation out there, a damning reputation, as being a big, big tennis fan. So thanks for talking some tennis with us. I appreciate that.
No problem.
Let's start general. What's your relationship with the sport? Tell us your tennis background.
You know, I'm a tennis fanatic. I became really involved in tennis big time, John, when my daughters started to play. Both my girls started playing at a basically young age, and then I started to pick it up while they were taking lessons, and I fell in love with the sport. In fact, I'll be playing singles tomorrow morning. I played 2 days ago. I play as often as I can where I live, and I follow the sport. I also have a Dick Vitale tennis big college tournament where we raise money for the V Foundation, which is so important to me, and we have all these colleges come in here. I mean, you name the college, and they come in November. Then I throw a big bash at my house for all the players and all the coaches, and I bring in Nick Bollettieri to speak along with myself to all the kids. So I'm familiar with a lot of the coaches, familiar with a lot of the things that go on in the world of tennis and junior tennis, and I love it.
What do you love about it? What about tennis feed something in you?
Well, I love the fact that, you know, guys play golf four and a half, five hours, and, you know, don't get much of an exercise. I play my hour and a half singles, get greater cardiovascular workout. I love the idea when you hit that one great shot, it just really gets you more excited for the next one, and I like the competition of one-on-one with someone, and it's just a lot of fun. I find it to be a lot of fun. I watched my daughters when they played on the national level junior tennis, and ultimately tennis led them to a tremendous education. They got full rides to go to Notre Dame. They played at the University of Notre Dame and met their husbands there, so tennis really opened the door in our family for a lot of positive things.
You raised your daughters, I believe, in the backyard of Mr. Bollettieri, whom you mentioned. Did your daughters get a chance to play with some of the players that were passing through the academy?
Yeah, you know, my daughters were at the academy at a time where I would go there and watch lessons of my girls, and on the next court, Nick would be, oh, you know, Nick and his great enthusiasm and energy. He would say,
I don't know what you're talking about.
He'd say, Dick, we didn't see these kids over here. Look, I'm going to show you these kids. I'd say, Nick, I don't care about those kids. I care about my two daughters. He'd say, but these kids, your daughters are going to play in college. They're going to win the U.S. Open. They're going to win the Australian Open. They're going to win the French Open. And on that court, you would not believe this, John. I would watch in my own eyes. Kids like, they were young, I don't know how old, 14, 15, maybe at 16. I watched Jim Curry. I watched Andre Agassi. I watched the kid who I thought was going to be a big star, but didn't pan out. I mean, he had a great college career, Martin Blackman, and I watched David Wheaton. I watched early, right prior to them, when my girl started, Aaron Krickstein, Jimmy Arias, and oh, man, it was so much fun. I'd go down there. I remember one time, I'm doing my first book I ever did with Curry Kirkpatrick, and Curry and I sitting in my yard, and we're talking and talking and talking. Finally, I just got bored, man. I said, Curry, I don't want to talk anymore about my career and all. Let's go watch some tennis. So where are we going? I said, Bolitari's. He's a Bolitari. I don't want to go there. They're going to tell me all about these great young boys. I said, Curry, there's a girl there I want you to see. I've never seen anything like this girl. He said, Dick. So we went down there. And Curry ended up, I believe, doing a major story on her. It was Monica Seles. And I will never forget, Nick, he comes over to me. He said, Dick, you should see her. She's, and I knew she might have been 12 or 13. Unbelievable potential. He said, I'm going to show you something. And he called over on the court about five or six young ladies that were playing on the tour. I mean, they were like 50, 40, 60. I don't remember their names. I think it was something like maybe Susan Sloan and Kathleen Horvath and those kind of young ladies, good players. And he talks to Monica's father, and he says to me, watch this, watch this. I told the pros to hit their second serve. Dick, he goes, I guarantee they don't hit a second ball. Watch this. They hit the second serve, and Monica Rippon, winner after winner. Then, I'll never forget, right after that, Nick gets all upset because she's been on the court so long, she's working so hard. And he said, look, that's it. It's about 98 degrees. That's it. She's had enough, he told the father. She's had enough. We turn around. 20 minutes later, we hear bam, 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 and we look. And it's Monica Seles by herself hitting on the wall in 90-some degree weather after working out for 3 hours. Now, if that's not, I do a lot of motivational speaking across the country. Now, if that doesn't inspire you to greatness and how she became great, it just didn't wake up.
That's a great story. I don't know where to even go. We got Nick Bolitari and Dick Vitale both speaking at the same place. We got Curry Kirkpatrick. We got Martin Blackman, who, as you know, is now. May not have made it as a tennis pro, but has a tremendous impact with the USTA. That's a great Monica Seles story. I'm curious, though, how did you do as a tennis dad?
How did I do as a tennis dad?
You watch your daughters play.
I stayed away from matches as much as I could. I watched practice. It churns your stomach, man. It's worse than coaching. Watching them when they're up 5-2, let's say, and now all of a sudden it's 5-4. It just drives you nuts. My daughters played in an era when there was so many good top-notch players up on top, that we realized after a while, my daughters were realistic. They had realistic goals. Their goal was to be able to go to a first-class college, get a free education, and it wasn't free because if I factor in what it cost me for tennis lessons, it was more than a scholarship. But the thing is this, that we loved it because they learned how to compete, they learned about discipline, and we see it as a positive in their lives. They married two quality guys. My one son-in-law was a quarterback in Notre Dame. Today he's the youngest sitting United States Circuit Court judge in the state of Florida. My other daughter married a lacrosse player at Notre Dame, and today he's an outstanding, got a tremendous practice as a hand, shoulder, elbow surgeon. And I really believe all of this ties in with tennis because it taught them discipline. It taught them about character. It taught them about quality. If you handle it the right way, John, as you know, there are a lot of parents, unfortunately, they want their kids defined by the word tennis. We used to tell our kids, tennis doesn't define you. It's a little part of your life. It's something that you like to do. You do it. In fact, I gave this little lecture I'm talking to you about just yesterday. I have 5 grandkids. One of them is a tremendous lacrosse player on a national level at his age, but the other 4 are all nationally rated tennis players. And just yesterday, they're showing me what Nadal's done, what Djokovic has done, and I said, look, I don't care about those. You can't talk about it. You're not going to be at that level. So let's just be realistic here with our goals. But they're very good players. They're all nationally rated in their age groups. We have a 10. We have a 14. We have twins who are 13, and they play all major tournaments all over the country, and they love it. And they're heading, I think, in the right direction where they're going to be college players. I mean, they have services now, which really upsets me. They have these services already in the 8th and 7th grade rating these kids 5-star, 3-star, 2-star, 4-star for the college coaches. I'm lucky. My grandsons, for example, are 5-star players, so it makes it look pretty good.
You're talking basketball or tennis now? Basketball?
I'm talking,
tennis. For the recruiting services.
I'm so upset. I had a little battle with my daughter yesterday in a nice way when I say battle. I said, Sherry, they're very good basketball players. They're outstanding baseball players, switch hitters. They Little League, they were super. I said, now I see it's all tennis, tennis, tennis. And you know and I know, if you get into that national level, to be able to compete with the kids you're competing now with, it's almost like every day they go, 2.5, 3 hours. In fact, when I get done with you, I'm going down to see my kids train, my grandkids.
Oh, that's great. All right, I'm not going to keep you too long then, if that's your out. Hey, everyone, let's take a quick pause and pay some bills. Dick Vitale, of course, is known for his work in college basketball. We're going to talk pro basketball. The NBA playoffs are heating up, and here at the SI Network, we give hoop fans two great shows in one. First, there's Open Floor. Lee Jenkins interviews the most intriguing personalities in pro basketball. And then Andrew Sharp and Ben Golliver sit down once a week and break down the best storylines for these very intriguing 2016 NBA playoffs. Actually, the first round, a little rough. Now they're getting intriguing. Anyway, that's all at OpenFloorSI.com's new NBA podcast. Find it on iTunes, Google Play Music, or at si.com/podcasts. I'm curious. I mean, tennis is so different from basketball in that there's no teammates that you can. No one's passing up open shots, and there's no calling a TO, baby. You're not you're not stopping for breaks. The coach isn't telling you what to do. There's no halftime. Isn't it a much different experience than basketball, where it's just one on one and no consultation with anyone other than yourself?
Well, you know, I think personally, I don't know your feelings, I really think they should allow coaching in tennis. I do. I think they should have somebody that can sit there and talk and inspire and motivate. I don't see why. Why is that such a dilemma? Why would that be such a problem? I don't understand that. You explain to me. I know you're a tennis lover. Why do they deny that from happening?
I would say one of the virtues, I'll push back gently and say one of the virtues of the game is sort of figuring things out for yourself, and one of the beauties is problem solving, and that dynamic gets a little weird. I mean, the other thing I have, when they have these coaches come out on TV, right, for the women's matches that aren't Grand Slams, the coaches come out, and it's always a losing player. So you always have a coach, and it's always a man, and he's always yelling, and it's always sort of, it's motivating, but it's not the player that's winning. It's not a positive look on TV. And I just think the optics of this man rushing out to the stands to sort of tell the loser to get her stuff together isn't necessarily, but you know, I mean, I'm certainly open to other opinions. As a former coach yourself, I suspect you could do some pretty quality motivating in between sets.
Yeah, I think you can. I just think that if you handle it the right way and you make sure the coach, you hit him with a couple technicals if he gets carried away.
But I
really think that would add something. Having a coach, a little more color, a little more excitement to it. But I tell you, we just had a tremendous tournament here to show how good players are. Right where I live, we had a $100,000 tournament, and these guys came in, and I would say they're ranked maybe from 100 down. And I'm telling you, it makes you understand. I said to my wife on the baseline, we're watching these young guys play, and I said to my wife, there was a kid named, you might even know the name, Francis Tiafoe.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Tiafoe. I'm watching these guys play, and I said, hon, it's amazing. These guys are like 100, 150. Can you imagine how good the Federer is and the Nadals? I will know. Here's another great story. You get a kick out of John. I'm on the road doing a lot of speeches. I'm traveling, and all of a sudden, I come home. The car drops me off in front of my house, and we had a tennis court in my backyard, and I hear bam, bam. And I said, gee whiz, who could that be? That's not my daughters. They're in college or school. They can't be them. I know it's not my wife because she's not that kind of player. Who can? So I walked back there. Unbelievable. I can't believe my eyes. I'm watching, playing with Tim Gullickson coaching, Pete Sampras in my yard with Arias, and they're hitting the ball. And my wife then comes out and she said, hey, what happened, she said, Nick Bellatieri called up, said everybody was bothering Sampras at the academy, and he can't concentrate. He called and asked if they could use the court. And I said, of course. And then he practiced there for a while. I used to go watch him. And I'd stand at the net and watch his serve, and I'd say, oh, my God, how do you get that thing back? It's unreal. And then he won. This is a funny story. He won the U.S. Open right after that. And I'm up at there, and I went to the U.S. Open, and I see him walking by. I said, Peter, come over here. I said, Peter, where's my check, man? Where's my check? You practice in my yard. You practice. But tennis has always excited me. I love it. I remember one time taking a couple of buddies of mine to go down and watch Celis hit with Agassi. I went down there, and they couldn't believe it. Guys like Hal McRae, baseball player, Bob McAdoo. Went down and said, what, was Max a big tennis lover?
He's a player, His daughter.
His daughter's a terrific player. He was a great player with basketball. He was a great player. I don't mean good. I mean great. Billy Knight. Remember Billy Knight?
Yeah, Billy Knight. Memphis GM.
He could play tennis.
Non-John Lucas division. Who's the best basketball tennis crossover, you think? I mean, John Lucas is a class by himself, right?
Lucas was off the charts.
Yeah.
For what he did, and I tried to share that with my daughter, my grandsons. I said, look, he played basketball. How did he play? He was the number one player in a country. He got drafted number one, and yet he won the NCAA championship in tennis. That's amazing. And I sat with John one time, and I asked him, how did he do that? And he broke down his schedule. He said, during basketball season, it would be basketball, but he'd find time every day to hit for about an hour, hour and a half. Then reverse that scheme when it was tennis season. He'd do his tennis full time and find an hour and a half to shoot, to handle the ball in basketball. So you could do it with discipline. I think one of the real sad things, I took my kids to Wimbledon. And I became, by the way, grandfather of the year.
Yeah, seriously.
If you were in my house right now, because I'm looking at it right now, if you were in my house in my office, there's a picture. We get to Wimbledon. I took all 11 of my family, 5 grandkids, my son-in-law's daughters. We got about 2-3 years ago. We go there, and the minute I get on the grounds, my grandsons, who at that time were about 11, my twins in particular, they go, Papa, Papa, we got to meet Roger Federer. I love Roger Federer. I said, I don't know Roger Federer. You're not going to meet Roger Federer. I'm going to take you to ESPN. You're going to meet McEnroe, Patrick. You're going to meet Gilbert. You're going to meet Chris Everett. You're going to meet Mary Jo Fernandez. And we go. They get pictures all and we leave. But Papa, what about Federer? I said, I don't know Federer. You're not going to see. Anyway, what happens? A buddy of mine was coaching a girl named Lizicki, Sabina Lizicki.
Sure.
And she upset Arapova.
Okay.
She upset Maria. And he was walking on the grounds, and I saw him. He used to coach my daughters when they first started. And I'd say, Chip, how you doing? Great win. And then say to me, you know, what are you doing, man? I said, well, everybody's here, the family. He said, well, I got to meet them. I said, Chip, do you have any idea where Federer is practicing? I said, because my grandsons are driving me nuts. He said, yeah, taking the court that we just were on. It's a problem, though. He said, there was 50 people watching us, and there's about 2,000 going to be around him. I said, oh, that ends that story. And then he looked, and he said, give me that thing you're wearing. I was wearing an ESPN. He said, Dick, you could go anywhere with that pass, anywhere. I said, but it's not me. I said, my grandson. I said, put him close to you and just flash that, and you can run on the court. And I did. We flashed it, and then I'm walking away. He says, do you know Paul Anacone? I said, yeah, I remember when Paul played the Academy of my daughters. And he said, why are you asking me about Paul Anacone? He said, Paul Anacone is Roger's coach. I said, are you serious? So we go there, and we're on the court, thousands of them. I tell my grandsons, don't say a word. He's got a big match coming up with Djokovic. I don't want to say a word. And all of a sudden, I make eye contact with Anacone, and he comes over. Dick, I really wish I had more time to spend with you. How's Terry Sherry's? But we got a major match. And I said, well, I don't want to bother you, Paul, but is there any chance when he's done, can he take a picture with the kids? He said, absolutely. And he comes over. My grandson, if you see this picture I have, it's unbelievable. Their eyes. In fact, you give me I want you to text me a phone number, and I'm going to text you the picture.
It.
And I'm telling you, I became grandfather of the year. And then Roger, I didn't know he knew me. I said, you know, lots of luck, man. I said, well, my buddies, we feel that you're the best in the business. And he said to me, well, coming from you, it means, I said, well, he must know I am. And then he took all the six balls he practiced with, and he signed them, and he gave them to my two grandsons. And I became grandfather.
Oh, man, he retired the award. The NFL draft was huge for gas mask Google searches. It was also huge for us here at SI. We have three big shows analyzing the aftermath. First, On the Clock with Chris Burke, who painstakingly tracked the draft all season long. Then we get MMQB. They have a total wrap-up podcast. And finally, Draft Season, SI's NFL Draft miniseries. I encourage you to listen to all the episodes. It's really something we're proud of here. That's On the Clock, the MMQB podcast, and Draft Season. Find them on iTunes, Stitcher, and now on Google Play Music as well. I was thinking you probably can't do Australia because of the basketball season. You've done Wimbledon. Have you done the French as well?
I did the French, did Wimbledon, U.S. I've never done Australia. At my age now, I'm going to be honest with you, John, I just can't travel that far. I would love to go there. My daughters went on a safari. Africa, I was going to go with them and my grandkids and all. And last night I told my wife, I'm not doing 18 hours.
Come on, you're doing West Lafayette, Indiana. You're doing Stillwater. You can do a direct flight to Paris. You can do Johannesburg.
Hey, buddy, it's great talking tennis, but I want to get one thing before I leave.
Yeah.
Something very important to me, John, is raising money for kids battling cancer.
Absolutely.
I have my big Dick Vitale Gala coming up next week. We're already sold out, over 800 people. We'll have over 70 celebrities, including Nick Bollettieri will be there, including Jim Harbaugh, Michigan. We're honoring Urban Meyer. We're honoring, the great Robin Roberts from Good Morning America, Bo Ryan, because these people have done wonders in the world of cancer and raising dollars for cancer. And then we're going to give two grants out. We're giving two grants out for two youngsters that lost their lives this year to cancer. One, a girl right here in Sarasota, an accomplished pianist, violinist. I talked to the dad the other day, and I'm telling you, if you heard his voice, how crushing. He lost this girl on March 27th. She used to tour all over the world and play at age 12 and 11. You should see the talent. We're going to run a video at the event of her talent, but we're going to do $250,000 research grant in her name, and one in the former coach at Michigan, Lloyd Carr's grandson, Chad Carr. We're going to do it's the same thing for him. He lost his life to brain cancer. So anybody who wants to help me, anybody listening, please, you can call this number. We're trying to raise dollars to finance these grants. 941-374-6026. 941-374-6026. And you can help us. You may ultimately save the life of someone you love, because only 4 cents out of every dollar raised for cancer research goes for kids in pediatrics. And that is a crime.
And we have a lot of people in South Florida, too, and all throughout Florida. The gala is May 13th, correct?
Gala is May 13th, Ritz-Carlton Resort. It'll be a great time. We got 70, so, I mean, we got Mike Bray coming, Notre Dame, Bob Huggins, West Virginia, Steve Alford, UCLA. I mean, the list goes on. Sean Miller, Arizona. We got Chris Sabo, the Cincinnati Reds. We got Archie Griffin, two-time Heisman Trophy winner. We got, Jim Harbaugh. The list is on. Nick Wallenda, the high wire. And we got him. We got baseball players, basketball. John Gruden's coming. Dan Schumann of ESPN. People from ESPN, Chris Fowler. In fact, he's going to introduce me, but it's going to be a great night. It's probably now in my life the most important thing in my life to my last breath. I have five healthy grandkids, and I've gotten to know these kids, John. Andy Staples of your paper covered it 1 year,
That's right.
He saw the emotion involved. I get to know a lot of these kids and their families. They feel part of my family, and I'm telling you, we've had 12 kids with us over my 10 years of my gala who have either been with our gala or their families were, who have lost their lives to cancer. And that's all because there's not enough dollars for research. People can also learn more if they go to DickVitaleOnline.com.
We're going to put all
that
in.
Hey, man, I appreciate you having me on.
You are the grandfather of the year. You are awesome, baby. I want to know, though, last question. there's a vacancy now with Mike Tirico leaving. I think you need to cover some tennis. All seriousness, I think we need this passion for ESPN.
Hear me doing tennis. I mean, that would throw me out of boots of 1 minute with me getting so excited and getting so
we need more
up.
Of that. Are you kidding me? We need you.
They're so low key there. They're so. That was a great forehand. That was a tremendous. Oh my God! The backhand. They're taking the ball. They're taking the ball so early. Look at the serve. Oh my, the serve. She's not getting her toss up enough. She's tossing it to the interior. Hey, the one great thing about Serena Williams, she can absolutely have a bad day with ground strokes, and her serve can get her to the top of the mountain.
We need you in the booth. I appreciate this. Go watch your grandson hit some balls. This was a lot of fun.
Hey, John. Thanks, man. Appreciate being on. You do a great job.
Appreciate that. Anytime. Thanks, Dick. Take care. All right. That does it for this week. That was our guest, Dick Vitale. Hope you enjoyed that as much as we did. We met him many years ago, and he's always been incredibly generous with his time, candor, and, of course, has passion to burn almost irrespective of the topic at hand. We'll have a new guest next week. Pretty soon we'll be previewing the French Open. Again, I'm John Wertheim. Thanks to our producer, as always, the lovely, the talented Jamie Lasanti, who's doing a lot of work here. Follow me at John_Wertheim on Twitter. Subscribe to this show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice. Hear the whole SI network, the panoply, as it were, at si.com/podcasts. We'll do it again next week. Have a good week, everyone. Thanks for listening.